Incoming pitch. Spin rate of 2,500 RPM, 95.6 miles per hour.
Adjusting swing. 12 degrees. Proceed with launch angle.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. This is your co-host, Rob DiPietro. You can always find me on Twitter, at DeadpoolHitter. Shortly, I will be bringing in my co-hosts, Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver, and we will be getting right back into going player by player in that ADP section. Last week, we left off at about 175, 177-ish, dating back 3 weeks on the NFBC Draft Champions format, 15-team draft and hold style. And spring training is right around the corner. News is coming out every single minute. Make sure you're reading the Mind the News section by Jeff Zimmerman on Fangraphs. Keep your ears and your eyes out for all these news that are coming out, because you're hopefully at a point right now where your player evaluation is at a good point, so you can just absorb the news and kind of move guys up and down your ranks accordingly instead of having to absorb all the information and still do player evaluation. But we'll get you up to speed here during this ADP breakdown, and we're going to get right back into it. We're going to start off with Mr. Paul Sewald, Josh Bell, Jonathan India, Mitch Haniger, Danny Jansen, Alec Baum, Bryce Harper, and Lawrence Nootbaar, Cody Bellinger, Kuiper Ruiz, Oscar Gonzalez, Jeff McNeil, John Gray, and Whit Merrifield. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode.
Here's the pitch.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Launch Angle Podcast. I'm co-host Rob DiPietro. I'm here with my two other wonderful co-hosts, Rob Silver and Jeff Zimmerman. Jeff, how are you doing this week?
Doing good. It's getting into season. It's also one of those times where, like, you kind of like a guy, and then something bad happens, so you kind of have to, like, move things around and just hopefully you don't anchor yourself too much. I kind of like Tyrone Taylor. It's kind of like a late sleeper, and then it's like, oh, now I'm hurt. So how do you deal with both of those? So, I really actually like this point in the season when things are changing. Like, literally, stuff really didn't change for about 4 months. It's like, you're done playing, and we really don't know anything. Besides a couple guys, you know, Nick Senzel on a scooter at Reds Fest. But besides that, it's just been, we don't know anything.
Yeah, my Tyrone Taylor, Drew Waters, outfield 7-8 on a draft champion looks pretty terrible right now. But I'm hoping they get back into the lineup as soon as possible. Rob, what's going on in your life, pal?
Well, first off, I'm shocked that Jeff is so humbled that he wouldn't mention that he's an award winner as of last night. Tanner and Jeff won award for best baseball book last year. Congratulations, Jeff, from the Fantasy Sports Writers Association. I know it wasn't a Grammy, it wasn't an Emmy, but it's like the third most prestigious award someone can win. Is that right?
It's around there, yes. I think
sincerely, congratulations and well deserved.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I think deserved. I'm more stunned because it's pretty much just like the Forecasters Award. It's kind of like everyone else's. We've been up for it two or three other times and have lost to them. It's kind of just like their award. Here, this is yours. You know, you get it every year. So it was kind of nice. Like I said, we finally won, I think, like out of every, we put it in, but finally actually be able to get the win is nice.
Are you concerned that Ron Chandler is going to send like a horse's head to your bed that you're going to wake up with one day now that you stole his award from him?
Possibly. Yeah. I'm seeing him here in about a week. So if I don't make it back from Miami, you guys know what happened.
You'll know what's what. No, I think it's awesome. You and Tanner put so much work into the book. Everybody who listens to this podcast has either read the process or certainly knows about it. It really is well done. It is a great resource. And if you haven't read Jeff's and Tanner's book before, now that it's an award-winning book, you should definitely get a copy of it. It's not too late. It can take you a long time to get through the book, but especially if you're if you're new to fantasy, if this is like the first year you're playing the NFBC, or if you want to kind of take your home league game to the next level, you can read it pretty quickly. Like, you can sit down in a couple hours, get a ton of knowledge out of it. And then it's for me, as someone who's been playing for quite a while, it's just a great resource to go back to in draft prep during the season. There's so much in there that it's, I just have it sitting next to my computer and I look at different things about it all the time. So it's a great resource. There's both an electronic version and the hard copy. I'm old school. I like having the physical book to be able to kind of flip through to, like note pages that I go to. The PDF's great. And you like the good thing about the PDF is if you order it, you have it 30 seconds later. But I really do like same with the jokes aside, like the HQ guys do a great job, obviously, on the Forecaster. I also like having the physical book there, even though it's fun getting the PDF. Order it if you haven't bought it yet.
Yeah, I mean, just like with them and us with the PDF is like, okay, it's done, and you send it off to the publisher, and it's like this void. So, like, I could tell with them too. It's like, oh, we got the PDF done, and now it's like, we'll see when the book comes out, and we feel the same way. So, that's just a given, I think, with any publication.
Yeah, and I think the process is wonderful. Like you said, Rob, in season two, there's so many things that there are not player stats that change, and then you have to just, it's not relevant. There's so much in-season strategy, fab information, that you can really take with you and just keep thumbing through during the season. So it's a really valuable tool for sure. Jeff, is that your first or second FFWA win?
It's asking about my sixth one.
Jesus
Woo!
Christ, never mind. This is you're
What
like
a
that. What
stud.
was that old soap opera star who kept winning the award or something like this? For never
Oh
mind, Jeff.
no.
This is you win these awards more often than Rob changes his underwear. Like this is just something you do.
The weird thing is I have three for football. And I did it for like
Really?
a year and a half. Yeah. I kind of quit football once the book came because I couldn't do both, like during the off season. So it was like, well, we got the book now. And it's like, wait, you can either do the book or keep writing football articles. So it was, yeah, a weird like 2 year span when I was doing some football.
That's awesome.
That's
Keep
it.
it up, Jeff. You're bringing fantastic knowledge and valuable stuff to the fantasy community. Speaking of your mining the news article this week, you brought up an interesting thing about the infield shifting and what teams will be allowed to do before the inning starts, and they have to keep a specific alignment for the full inning and how it may affect position eligibility for the season. So I just wanted to get some clarification on what's the official rule and then how players will gain eligibility in the season.
So it's always been to start with, the rule is for almost all the formats, it's like if you play the position anytime during the game, you get a game at that position. There was like a year when Rizzo had second base because of it. They had moved him over there, and that's how he gets it. So that's what the rule is for gaining eligibility for most formats. It's not that where you started the game, because people can come in and move around. It's if you were there at any point during the game. And what they're talking about is if you get a bunch of left-handers coming up and they're you fill on I'm pulling them to the right side of the infield, is they may move their shortstop over to play second base and let their non-fielding second baseman hang out on the other side. So your shortstop's going to gain second base eligibility. Maybe the next inning he just moves back or for the rest of the game even stay that way. So there's this possibility of players gaining quick eligibility and not really like starting that way. So it's tough to know who's going to get it. I'm guessing like Tampa Bay may have like everyone qualified, at like every infield position by the time the season's done. But it's just something that's going to come up and maybe we'll be seeing more of it in spring training. But it's just going to be, yeah, we might have a lot of middle infielders that have just positional flexibility across the board, and it might even be a little bit more going into next season too, like once they get it, how things work out then.
Yeah, I mean the interesting thing is like when you could shift anyone anywhere you wanted, Wander Franco lining up at the second base bag, he didn't need to change position because he's just the shortstop standing wherever he felt like. Now by rule, let's say in a hypothetical world, Wander Franco is a much better fielder with much better range than Lau is. If they want Wander Franco to line up on the second base side. They just have to switch their positions, and suddenly Wander Franco can go anywhere in between, you know, the line at second base and first base. So it's, I hadn't really thought about it, but if you have, it doesn't have to be only a middle infielder. If you have your third baseman, like if you have a Matt Chapman, for example, and let's say it's Chapman and Biggio who are playing on for the Jays, it's not crazy to think that the Jays are going to line up Matt Chapman as the second baseman with certain hitters, and suddenly, like, you might, like, as Jeff says, you might be doing it for one batter out of nine, but from a fantasy perspective, in that hypothetical, Matt Chapman has just become a second baseman and played a game there. So if he does it 10 straight games, he suddenly has, you know, in a format where you need to play a position 10 times to gain eligibility, he has that eligibility. Whereas last year, Chapman lining up in a weird position, he didn't change positions. So the Rizzo situation was a little bit different. I remember the year that Rizzo started, and I believe in Yahoo, Rizzo still has second base eligibility because of that for 2023. But it's something to watch. Like, it's a really neat little wrinkle to the rule changes that I really hadn't thought about until Jeff mentioned it.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty fascinating. The Chapman one is very interesting. I really wasn't thinking about third baseman moving over, but I guess some of the better ones, I guess, you know, we could really look at the weak second baseman and some kind of third baseman that might be able to be a upgrade over there. But
it's like a bad softball team who has one outfielder who just can't catch the ball. So you keep shifting that guy around so that, like, the ball just won't be hit to this guy. Now, I know if, like, I'm on Ariel Cohen's softball team and everybody's a good player, you don't have that issue. But on some softball teams, you just have a guy or a woman who just can't catch. So you figure out, where can we put him for this batter to make sure the ball doesn't get hit to him? That's kind of what a Dodgers or a Rays type team might do if they have a weak fielding infielder, is just move them around to, like, hide them as much as they can.
Yep. Pretty fascinating. Going to be interesting to see how it kicks up during the season. Going to take a quick timeout right now. This is Rob D, the Deadpool Hitter. I just want to take a brief opportunity to let you guys know about my podcast, the Pull Hitter Podcast. If you guys haven't been listening to it or have never before, please go check it out. It would be really helpful to me. And check out, see if you like it. Got a lot of good stuff going on there. We're always talking about roster construction, game theory, just getting inside the minds of great fantasy players, fantasy analysts, and people who make projections, everything. And I'm going to be offering a service pretty soon on Patreon. And pretty much it's going to have a lot of loaded content on already. Going to be a little podcast draft guide with a whole bunch of strategy talk about how to approach your fantasy league coming in the season. And in-season tools is where we're really going to try to pack the punch with offering some lineup tools, just going over handedness, platoons, how to set your lineup for the two lineup periods in the NFBC. We run down every series, break down the players that you might even start in your deep draft champions leagues, under the radar type of guys, the not so obvious players. And we're also going to have a prefab talking about who to pick up in that next week, who to drop to. And we're going to go over every two start pitchers for the week coming up and look ahead at 2 weeks ahead and where to find some good pitching matchups to make the differences in your pitching stats. So overall, it's going to be about at least 5-6 podcasts weekly. And we're going to really try to help everyone handle their in-season management. So once that's out, I will definitely let everyone know and guide you to the spot that you can go. If you want to come check it out and support me, that'd be really great. It's going to be a Discord available too. We're all going to help each other become better fantasy players. So thanks for that opportunity. I really appreciate it. And I hope you give the Pull Hitter Podcast a listen and the Patreon a try too when it's ready to launch. And we'll get back into the show right now. Thank you. Let's get right into some player talk. Last week, we ended up with Brandon Nimmo at ADP 177. There's one player that has crept up 12 spots since last week. And again, we're looking at the last 3 weeks of Draft Champions ADP on the NFBC. And that's Paul Sewald. He moved up from about 177 to 166 right now. So we're going to hit on him first before we go drop back down to the 177 range. So Paul Sewald, 20 saves last season, 31 in the last two seasons, had some procedures this offseason. Are we concerned about any of the procedures or any of the other good arms in the pen? Jeff?
Yes and yes. First of all, Sewald is a fine closer. He's not the best. His numbers aren't going to be great, but there's been a lot worse pitchers that have gotten 30-plus saves. So I think that part's fine. My worries are, even though the team and he has come out and stated that the surgeries aren't an issue, I don't really believe them. Like, it was two of them in his heel and his elbow, which – so I think that I kind of want to see – I haven't drafted him. I've been in a few leagues, and I've just always passed over him because I just want to see him throw once. It's just too many things that can go wrong. And the other thing is if he struggles any little bit, if he has any setback, he may not have the job the rest of the year. Like, that bullpen is loaded. So, like I said, could I see him even move up as we get toward, you know, the last 2 week drafts that happened the last couple of weeks of the season? For sure. But right now, like I said, until I kind of see him in the game with the velocity up, he's just someone I'm going to pass over. There'll be other closers I will rather take a chance on right now. And but yeah, I don't know if this is I went and looked, and the ADP is kind of close in the OCs. I just kind of think that this is kind of a draft champions, and maybe it's still kind of coming over where it's like, I need a closer, I need someone with 20 saves, I'm just going to throw him in my lineup all year, or 15 saves, and I'm just going to hope that he's fine. But I think in like a redraft, I just don't see him going this high. I'd rather take a chance on someone that might be more full-time and with better looking future health-wise.
Yeah, what this pick screams to me is, oh shit, I lost out on Leclerc, and I really need a closer. who's next? And the market is saying that, right? Because did we talk about Munoz? No, we didn't talk about him. But like, it always worries me when you have a team, and it doesn't happen every year, but it happens fairly frequently. It's certainly not unprecedented. When you have two relief pitchers on the same team, both going in the first 15 rounds, what the team is saying is they're two talented closers who both could have the job, but we have no idea which one it's going to be. And the answer, especially in Seattle, could very easily be both of them. And like, are both of them good enough pitchers that if they get half the closer's job, that they could both have some value? There's no doubt, but I'm with Jeff. Like, in a redraft, I want no part of Sewald. Like, it's just, I think the odds that he is healthy and runs with 90% of Seattle's saves this year for six full months is a very low percentage play. And I think there are both better options, like recently early, given where he's going now, and much later. So for redraft, I have no interest whatsoever at his cost. He would have to drop a lot, or Seattle would have to dramatically change their approach in spring training and say he is both healthy and our full-time closer, period, full stop. And there is no reason why Seattle would do that from a real baseball perspective.
Yep, absolutely makes sense. It's also a big fly ball pitcher, 1.4 home runs per nine. So again, even if the performance gets a little riskier, that can go up. And Diego Castillo still lingering around too, you know, seven saves last year, six in the first half before he had a shoulder impingement. So, and then you got Matt Brash, who everyone's raving about. So there's just so many options there. It's hard to, I think, really lock him in at that pick for sure. Let's move on to Josh Bell, going at, on average, 177, as early as 154. He had a pretty damaging second half last year where he hit four homers and 194 and lost at bat down the stretch for a San Diego team heading into the postseason. Do we put any stock into maybe right field and in Cleveland playing a little good for him? Jeff, how do you like Josh Bell this year?
I think this pick for Bell is fine. I think if you've missed out on first baseman, he gives you 80% of what the top guys do. He hits for a decent average. He hits for some home runs. He's going to be in the middle of the lineup and give you runs and RBIs. Yeah, so I don't know if there's going to be any like huge increase. I mean, he's kind of been this way. The one thing, he's like the one person, I believe, the narrative that he just like wears down during this season. Just he's done it consistently, and I just don't know. Like, he's not the most athletic person there is. And but yeah, he's just one. You just have to know that's coming and maybe kind of be on the lookout for possibly another one. His OPS is over 800 in the first half, and it's over his career and under 800 for the second half. It's about a 50-point difference. So, like I said, when he starts fading, don't be surprised, especially if you're in a shallower league where you might be able to find an improvement. But the most interesting stat, because I was kind of looking at his splits and noticed something, but had to do some easy math. But over his career, he is 4 for 16 in stolen bases. I was like, holy cow. You think at some point when he was, you know, like 4 for 10, they might have like cut him off. But that's pretty impressive that he just has been able to actually be able to get those 16 green lights out of, like I said, completely useless knowledge, and don't expect any steals out of him, but just a fine first baseman.
I think the problem with Josh Bell to me is not so much of that. It's that there's this illusion because of 2019 that there's a mirage at the end of the desert of upside with Josh Bell. And you look at the 2019, it was, you know, 37 home runs, 94 runs, 116 RBIs with happy fun ball. And if you take his 2019 out of his career, the rest of his career has been basically the same. You know, per 600 plate appearances with 2019 removed, he's got 73 runs, 20 home runs, 76 RBIs. And that's who he is. And there's one of two ways, and I don't think going to Cleveland changes that dramatically. Really doesn't. It's not like he was playing in San Francisco. Like it's not the ballpark. That's just who he is. And on the one hand, that line, 73, call it 75, 20, 75. That's a top 150 player. Like if he just stays healthy and does that makes this a perfectly fine pick. I'm just not sure there's a lot more upside than that. And I think people think, boy, if Josh Bell puts it all together, he could be 2019 Josh Bell. And while I suppose anything is possible, I think that's a fluke. And I think it stands out like it really jumps out right now. So the upside is illusory. So just make a decision. Like if I don't get the first baseman before this, if I have my corner infielder, how much more do I like the Josh Bell pick here than what comes later? And if your answer is no, I want something safe, like a top 150 player right here sounds pretty darn good to me, then take Josh Bell. But don't think that, like, don't write in 30 plus home runs, because I really don't think there's any reason to think that's what's coming from Josh Bell.
Yeah, his batting average is like sneaky good. It can kind of help you compared to this run environment. So that's kind of the one thing, is he's kind of two category, even though, like I said, yeah, he's just kind of a step down. But if you look afterwards, there's just, I don't know if there's anyone that's like safe, maybe Trey Mancini. I mean, but that's kind of got some issues. Like everyone else has got major issues going after here. I think he's like the last safe one. If someone likes like tiers, which I'm completely against the whole concept, I could see why someone would like him right here.
Yeah, I think you got nailed it, Robbie. Just exactly fine as is. And I kind of, what I do like for a switch hitter, he doesn't really have big splits. He hits the ball as hard from the left side or the right side of the plate, which you see a lot of the switch hitters will have big disparities in how hard they hit the ball. But he seems to be pretty safe from that. Yeah, overall, pretty solid pick from this spot right here. Move on to Jonathan India, going on average 177 as early as 157. He's a year removed from 631 plate appearances of 21 homers, 12 stolen bases, 98 runs. Bunch of hamstring injuries caused his speed to go down last year and his effectiveness. How do we feel about his price here right now? Is it way too high, appropriately priced, Jeff?
Him and about four other guys I could see being second round picks next year. There's some of these guys that just got huge upsides or huge downsides right now. India's one where he could get back to stealing bases. He just didn't steal. I think he just was never healthy last year. But he had like three steal. It was something crazy. I have what my projections are. I don't have what he did. But the injuries just dragged him down. So we don't know what he's getting, like the power. Yeah, three stolen bases. I think people were hoping for at least 10 more than that. He went to someplace, I can't remember where it was. I wrote about it, Mining the News, and added a bunch of speed to his running. So even though he lost about 1 foot per second on his sprint speed last year, hopefully he can gain that back. His power was way down. His hard hit rate was down about 10%. So what can he get back? And can he start stealing again? Can he provide 20-plus home runs? Just tough to know. Like I said, I could just see him being, a great contributor with like a 270 average and, 25 home runs and 15 stolen bases, or we could have what we had last year. I just think that there's just this wide margin. And I think the shallower the league you're in, the more of a chance you should take on India. But just know, like, it could just, again, like, have what you have last year. And that's just sometimes tough to have in a deeper league.
Yeah, there's sometimes when it's fair and legitimate to give a player just a pass on a season. And I think you can certainly rationalize it reasonably with John India, which is, I just don't think last year was who he is. I think his rookie season, maybe he is one of those guys. It's not crazy to think his first season is the best season he will ever have, but his first season was a pretty darn good season, right? Like 2021, he was a top 70 player overall. Last year in the NFBC mains, his ADP was 89. So he was a late sixth round pick last year in the mains. So you are getting a massive discount here for good reason. But I agree with Jeff. Like if you can rationalize, I just don't want to count last year. Well, the projections are all counting last year. So you need to go back to last year's projections. Don't just take his 2021 and plop it in. You need to regress it. You need to, but go look up what his projections were last year when people were drafting him, in the sixth round. And I don't think it's crazy to say that's who I think he is. And if you do, this is a great pick. You could also make the exact opposite argument, which is, what are you talking about, Rob? Just pretend like last season didn't happen. Like, that's the most arbitrary. Like, where are you getting that from? He was hurt, but like, so it still happened. So there's no doubt there's a big range of outcomes here. This is the point of the draft. Even in I agree with Jeff's advice. Like, if you're in a 10-team league, then taking chances like this, where if you cut them, there's going to be really good players, is a good call. But even in a 15-team league, I'm much better taking a chance with on a John India here than, like, to use the stereotypical lazy counter example, Byron Buxton, right? Like, the cost is cheap enough here. There's also so there's an outcome that he's 2021 Jonathan India. There's an outcome that he's 2022 Jonathan India. There's also a middle outcome, which is he's pretty good and he's still usable in a 15-team league as a middle infielder. The only other thing I would say, though, is there are a lot of players later who are risky because they don't have certain jobs, because they don't have certain roles, because they're rookies, who have similar profiles. Like the 20 home run, 10 stolen bases profile, which is gold for us in fantasy, is, I'm not saying it's easy, because a lot of the guys I like later at middle infield, like literally you may be cutting a week into the season because they're in AAA or they don't have a starting job. But it's not that rare a profile right now that if I pass on John India, I can't get a guy who has, call it, a 60 to 70% likelihood of producing Jonathan India numbers, you know, the next Jonathan India. Like this is where the James Anderson story came from, right? Jeremy Pena was my last year's Jonathan India. I have lots of guys who are this year's Jeremy Pena. I just don't know who is going to be playing yet. So that's the other consideration is, while it's cheap for Jonathan India, given the risk, or reasonable, I should say, given the risk, there are other guys who are even cheaper, but are just as risky. So it depends who else you like.
Yeah. You know, he went on the IL right from the start of the season on April 15th, and he missed 50 games due to the hamstring injury. He also had a right hand, a left eye, and a foot injury. And like Jeff mentioned, supposedly he said he added 3 miles an hour faster from last year. So
sprint coach,
baby. Yeah. Speed coach.
Hired is driveline, wired sprint coaches.
Also to a minus 17 outs above average from second base. So maybe he's kind of the guy that maybe flipped up to third.
Can I bring up a question or like an observation here?
Yeah.
So I have my projections, and I'm, as Jeff knows, not religious, not anal retentive, but I really do try to make an effort similar to Fangraphs and Jason, that like the playing time for teams needs to make some logical sense. Mm-hmm. The team that I have the hardest time with right now is Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. I just don't have enough plate appearances for Cincinnati because I can't justify myself giving Joey Votto 650 plate appearances. I don't care what some of the projections have. Will Myers is not getting 660 plate appearances, and you start going down and there just aren't enough guys. And as bad as Cincinnati is going to be, though, one way or another, like, they're going to play 162 games. I feel pretty confident about this, and they will start 9 people in all 162 of those games. So even if they suck, and to be clear, Cincinnati is going to be horrific this year. They really are a very bad team. They are the team I have the hardest time projecting, because I just don't know who's going to play, but I know A, there will be guys who play, and B, it's a good enough ballpark. Like, you do have to give a shit about Cincinnati. You can't just slough them off and say, well, but it ultimately doesn't matter because they're bad. You can sort of do that with like a Detroit if you want to. I think it's a mistake, but Cincinnati, it sort of matters. But I don't know about you guys. I really have a tough time with them. I just can't find enough plate appearances in the players.
Yeah. I'm trying to find it, but I don't have the exact comment from Jason Martinez. It was like last year, I'm like, I can't remember who it was. Someone like Votto, like, how in the hell can you give him like 600 and some plate appearances? Like, basically, he was just like, who the fuck else am I going to give him to? You
know, it's just true, like, but it's true. It's right. It's like Nick Senzel is literally like going to be going to the Special Olympics this year because he can't walk. And yet we have to assume Nick Senzel is going to be playing because like, who else is going to play?
Right. And that's what he says. It's just like, he has to give like 100%, you know, at first base, like it has to add up, and then he sees how they hit and everything, but it's all percentages. And he's just like, I mean, that's just like the background behind it. And he's just like, what else do I do? He's just like, I just have to wait for someone to get hurt and see what happens, you know?
Yeah, opportunities will arise on this lineup, whether or not the players will be good enough to add in your team. But, you know, there's definitely some interest in their minor league guys, so maybe they get a taste.
I didn't even mean it as like somebody awesome is going to emerge there. It's just like, I don't know what to do with it because it's just such a wasteland in terms of their depth chart is just so barren right now. Yep.
Absolutely. Let's move over to Mitch Haniger, outfielder on the San Francisco Giants, going at about average 179 ADP. Another injury marred season from the power hitter here. 11 homers last year and 247 plate appearances. Jeff, what's your thoughts on Mitch Haniger?
Okay, pretty much everything we said about Josh Bell applies to him. They're about the same profile. I just don't trust Haniger's health. He's always been hurt. He had problems with his ankles last year, and they're still keeping him in the outfield because all their other options are like, it kind of feels like the White Sox, like they have a lot of DHs on the Giants. Like, everyone should be DHing, and probably Haniger should at this point in his career, but he's going to have to go out there with Jock Peterson. Obviously happened to DH. Like, Haniger's, you know, it's an obvious choice. But he's just fine. He's like in the outfield, he's going to hit a lot. He's going to be in the middle of the lineup. He's going to hit home runs. He's going to have a good average. He provides both of those at this point. You're just going to get no steals from him. So you're still getting those two categories. So just enjoy him. And with outfield the way it is, I think he's just the fine option at this point. There's, like I said, no upside, no downside besides the injuries.
So a rare disagreement between me and Jeff. I think there's a lot of upside with Mitch Haniger. His 162 game average is 99 runs, 32 home runs, 105 RBIs, 261. Like, that's better than Kyle Schwarber or Matt Olson. Now, what is the bet when you draft Mitch Haniger? As Jeff said, number one is health, and number two is his team and the ballpark. The health bet, like, you, it is very reasonable for you to be yelling at your podcast right now, Rob. Why would you use 162 game average for Mitch Haniger? That seems awfully optimistic to me. And there's no doubt. My point just is not that he will play 162 games. It's that when he has played, he is a really, really good hitter, like a elite power hitter in a way that I don't think Josh Bell is, other than the 2019 Happy Fun Ball year, with a batting average that is, for a slugger, like, very good. So I think Mitch Haniger, if he's healthy, is an elite slugger. I think on that team, given their lineup, they need Mitch Haniger to be in that lineup as much as possible. So I don't think they're going to play the platoon game with Mitch Haniger. I think they might have to manage Mitch Haniger to keep him as healthy for as long of a season as possible. But I think Mitch Haniger, if I see him, like, he's a guy who, this may sound weird to people who know me, he's somebody I want to see play a few spring training games, like, actually watch how he's moving. Like, is he able to, is he moving like a guy who looks like he's ready to play 6 months of baseball? Because let's be honest, like, his horrific injury was a rando injury. So while he's had lots of injuries, you know, the testicle injury is awful. I'm not going to make testicle jokes today. We've been there. We've done that. I'm trying to punch a higher to the level of humor these days. But that was awful, but random. Like, the other injuries are a bit more concerned. The ankle is a bit of a concern, which is why I want to see him. But if I can convince myself and rationalize myself that he is healthy right now, I think Mitch Haniger is a great potential buy here, with a ton of upside here, like, easily a top 100 player if you told me Mitch Haniger will stay healthy for 6 months.
I like that call. He does have two seasons on his ledger with 157 games played. So yep, it's definitely there for him, sure. But like I said, are you a movement expert, Rob? You're going to be able to know.
I know some internet doctors who I'll send clips to get their feedback on how his mobility is looking. But as somebody who's right now working out on a fractured ankle, I feel like I'm in a position to opine on the subject.
Bjorn's bodies, hashtag Bjorn's bodies. All right, let's move on to Danny Jansen, going off as the 13th catcher off the board at pick 181 on average, 15 homers, 260 average, and only 248 plate appearances last season. Is this ADP too aggressive for someone who just hasn't been able to get above 250 plate appearances in the last two seasons, Jeff?
Yeah, it's justified. With the way the catcher position is deeper, but even in 12 teams, there's only like 18 of them that are good. And it just is like just a cliff. It's horrible after that. So he's still like one of those reasonable guys that even if he's your first one and you want to stream the last one, I think he's fine. The one thing with him and Kirk is how the plate appearances are going to play out. I think you can safely put Jansen in for 60% of a full season, and Kirk, you know, will DH and possibly have some more. That's where I think that there's some possible upside to Jansen. I think, like, at the bare minimum, he's getting between 50 and 60%, but there's also a chance that he's also being part of the DH and he's got 80%, you know, between him and Kirk trying to get up to a full season. So his average, it's a little bit to be desired. So it might be a drag, like, as those go up, but also it'd be nice to get those possible 20 home runs from your catcher. Like I said, I kind of like him. Like I said, it's one of those ones where I don't mind taking an early one, and if he's my second one, I'll be happy with it, just knowing that I can have some playing time upside.
So I don't think people outside of Toronto, at least, really appreciate just how good a hitter Danny Jansen has been. So since July 1, 2021, so the last season and a half, Danny Jansen has the 8th best WOBA in baseball. Not amongst catchers, the 8th best WOBA in baseball. Aaron Judge, Goldie, Trout, Harper, Soto, Yordan, Freddie Freeman, then Danny Jansen.
Wow.
Now, needless to say, I need to drop the plate appearances for Danny Jansen to get into that list, but that's a fact. His problem, he hasn't been able to stay healthy, but he has turned himself into a tremendous hitter. Jeff mentions the playing time with Danny Jansen. There's no doubt it's both a mystery as of today and frustrating. Part of what you're betting on, if you're drafting either Kirk or Danny Jansen, is Brandon Belt. So you're partly making a bet, can Brandon Belt stay healthy this year? Because if Brandon Belt stays healthy for 6 full months, I don't think Brandon Belt gets 600 plate appearances, but he gets 350 to 400 really annoying plate appearances if you have bought either Alejandro Kirk or Danny Jansen, because they just cap what both of them can do. There are, by definition, only 700 catcher plate appearances, plus or minus, for those two to share. And as long as they're healthy, they will split it. And I think it'll be split pretty close to 50-50. Jeff may be right 60-40, but it'll be pretty close. And I think Kirk is going to get a lot of DH spots, even if Brandon Belt is healthy, certainly against lefties. But the volume of plate appearances goes up so much if Brandon Belt is hurt or is not effective. So I think there's a real scenario that if Danny Jansen can stay healthy, he is very, very good this year. And he will also, and these are not mutually exclusive, be very frustrating for fantasy owners, because you'll be like, he is killing it, and yet he's only playing 4 days a week, and I want to free Danny Jansen. And it's like, man, the Jays don't really care about freeing Danny Jansen. They want to keep him healthy. So it could be, he could be awesome. He could return great value at this pick, and he could annoy the crap out of you if you own him. So I like the pick also, obviously. I'm a big Danny Jansen fan. He is also a very good catcher. They love the way he handles the staff. So that's not an issue. That's not an anti-Kirk thing. They like how Kirk catches too. So like, it's not like they're going to bring in a third defensive catcher for these guys. They are the two catchers they've chosen. So yeah, hopefully he stays healthy, but it's a big risk. Like, let's, you know, if you believe staying healthy is a skill, especially at catcher, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. So that is by far the biggest question mark with him, is his health.
Yeah, I love his skills as well. And Rob, I wanted to ask you, just being a Blue Jay fan and watching the games, because, you know, we could look at the framing numbers, pop times, whatever, arm speed, and they're all pretty similar between Kirk and Jansen. I was just wondering, like, with Jansen being more injury prone, why Kirk DH'd 49 games and Jansen only 3? Wouldn't they maybe want to protect Jansen more and DH him more?
It's a great question. I think that in part, they as a team, for you, we can snicker at it. They as a franchise believe in catcher A catches this starting pitcher, this starting pitcher, this starting pitcher. Catcher B catches this starting pitcher and this starting pitcher. They like, again, I have no data to prove it, but I also have no data to disprove it. They believe it's true that for the most part, they like having a catcher catch a starting pitcher. So they want to get into those routines of who catches who and roll that. In part, I think how good a hitter Danny Jansen has become has snuck up even on the Jays. Right. Like, even though the numbers go back to July 2021, I don't think they went into the 2022 season thinking Danny Jansen is like Alejandro Kirk, that even though he's a catcher, he should be in the lineup every day. I think they thought he was a nice catcher who's a fine hitter. I think it is. He's turned, like I said, he has turned himself into this hitter that he is right now. Whereas Alejandro Kirk, like the bat, has been legit for a few years now.
Makes sense. Absolutely. Let's move along to Alec Baum, third baseman on the Philadelphia Phillies. Average 183 ADP, the 15th third baseman off the board. I looked at his Fangraph page and I was shocked to see his 24 career home runs and 1,228 career plate appearances. He is making some incremental improvements, but I just feel like he has a lot to be desired. But I don't know. I could be wrong on him. Jeff, what do you think about Alec Bohm?
I've always wanted to like him. I saw him play all – well, he went to college here at Wichita State, so I got to see him all the way through. And he just is Yandy Diaz. Like, just accept it, people. He's going to have too much on the ground. He's going to hit this ball, and you're like, Kenny, just put it in the air. Like, it's not happening. Because he is actually kind of hitting more of the line drives, he's going to have the batting average. And he steals a few bases. He's actually someone I like. I wouldn't mind if I don't have a backup third baseman on my bench for him to be my bench third baseman. But I would feel really bad if he was my starting first baseman. I think you can get similar players like Yandy Diaz later that'll give you similar production. But he's just really shown no uptick in power. Like, that's not coming. He's showing no signs of raising his bat path. There is some balance to his profile, I guess, before later, where it's like, okay, I'm getting some speed, some power, and a batting average from him. But this almost feels more like an outfielder. I don't know, maybe a second baseman down here. If you're kind of needing power from third base, I think you'll be disappointed. And hopefully you can find a better first baseman that can give you what you're looking for. So the other thing I kind of wonder if it's if it's because of draft champions where people are just like dying to get, yeah, he's gone 200 in redraft leagues in OC. So he's quite a bit down. I think people are just like, oh, I need to have a third baseman. He's it. I'm grabbing him now. So yeah, I could kind of see him drop as draft season rolls around.
It's interesting. Like, let's break down his 2022 stat line. So 13 home runs. I think we would all agree that may suck from what you're looking for from your third baseman, but he doesn't need to change to repeat 13 home runs, right? Like, that's not a fluke. Maybe he is a low teen home run hitter with some upside if he can improve, but 13 is repeatable. He has 151 runs plus RBIs. He played every day in a good lineup. I think that's repeatable, right? 79 runs, 72 RBIs, only two stolen bases. I agree with Jeff. Like, he should be a guy who steals you the 5-6 sneaky stolen bases, but he only had two last year, and he hit 280 off a 319 BABIP. Low strikeout rate, only a 17% strikeout rate. So while you can say like 280 may not be quite repeatable, he's a legit good batting average guy. He should help you. Without looking, do you guys know where he finished on the Razzball Player Rater with that stat line last year?
105.
You looked. There's no way.
You just I swear to God, I just guessed.
I'm just joking. He was 107.
What? Wow.
So that was a really good guess. I believe you. I can see your eyes. We have video going as we're recording this. If you either had the Razzball Player Rater pulled up or you did not look. So my point in all of this is the Yandy Diaz like comp is not wrong. He plays more than Yandy. He plays like literally every day in the lineup. And I do think there's a bit of upside from last year. I do think he could become an 18 home run to 20 home run guy instead of a 13 home run guy. I do think he could steal five bases. But if he's going 200, let's say, in the mains, and I can get a guy who just has to do what he's done before to get back up 100 points of value there, that seems like a pretty good buy to me. I'll have my power somewhere else. Like if I'm taking my third baseman or my corner guy that late, and I agree, it's always like opportunity cost in terms of there's a lot of first baseman I like. So if this is my corner guy, do I want to fill my corner spot with him? But if I don't have a third baseman, which I'm just fine with not having him, he is absolutely at his age, because he's also young enough where it's not crazy to project a bit of gains. that I'm just fine taking Alex Baum and just hoping that he does exactly what he did last year. I'm not penciling in a big step forward, but I do like young guys who have been in the league for a while and shown that they are competent major leaguers. It's not like he's struggling for a job who, like, if they do what they do, I make a profit. If they do even more, I just make a bigger profit. Give me all of that kind of player profile. So I like him. I like him. I can guarantee you my draft strategy going into drafts will not be built around him. But if I end up with him, or if in an auction I say $3 and there's silence, I'm just fine with that.
Yeah, I think what I liked about what he's starting to do is pull the ball in the air more, and he's handling the fastball a lot better, which was one of the biggest bugaboos against him. He whiffed against the fastball 10% less than last year. So maybe the bat speed's catching up. He's starting to hit for power on the pull side. And that could be, again, like you said, he doesn't need to boost up the homers to be the same guy, but if he does creep up a little bit in the home run department, he could be really solid. Next on the list is Bryce Harper, ADP 184. ADP in OC is 172-ish. So I guess my question too, I wanted to get your guys' opinion, not only on him overall, but whether or not you think he's more valuable in a fab league versus a draft and hold league. Jeff.
Just give me 1 second. I forgot. We actually had one with. Okay. I think his values, a lot of it is dependent upon your league. I just went and looked at the labor draft they had the other night where they have unlimited IL slots. So always the hurt guys will kind of move up. And he went in the 12th round. It's a 15-team league. So maybe a little bit ahead of here. I think in those types of leagues, he's obviously going to have more value. I think the biggest issue with him is, even in those, he's going to come back as utility, so he's going to suck that spot up. And I'm almost 99% sure he's not going to be playing every day. Like, they're going to slowly work him in, so you're going to have a part-time utility bat. And is that going to run for 2 or 3 weeks? Are you going to know when to start him and when not to start him if you're in a weekly league? So I think, like, even if you have him and you want to hold him, I think he's going to be tough to start for like 2 or 3 weeks when he comes back. So you're even losing some more time there. So I think that's the only format is where, like, I have an unlimited IL slot where I can hold him. Otherwise, like in the NFBC, I want no desire with someone's sucking up a utility spot for 3 months when he comes, or sucking up one of my 7 bench spots when he comes back. How good is he actually going to be? Is he going to play all the time? And will he eventually get outfield where I can start moving some people around? So I'm not – maybe it's not the best move for, like, my overall, but for my sanity for those 4 months, every time I look at that team and see Bryce Harper, you know, and I have to deal with him, I'm just going to take my sanity, ignore him, and let someone else deal with it.
Yeah, the only thing I'd add, because I echo everything Jeff said there, is he's also one of those trap guys that if he, let's say, has a slip in his rehab and is going to be out an extra 4 weeks, are you going to be able to, in redraft leagues, pull the trigger and say, and now I cut Bryce Harper? Because he is the ultimate trap guy. I can't cut Bryce Harper. He's Bryce Harper. And the day he comes back, he's one of my 2 or 3 best hitters. So I have to hold him through May, then June, then July. And suddenly it's August 1st, and you've been holding a dead spot on your roster for that long. And we all like to say to ourselves, I can be cold. I can be like Phil. I will be rational every week. And if I need to cut him, I will cut him. And maybe some people listening to this are like that. I can tell you I'm awful at that. It's one of my weak spots, is not cutting the guy who goes on the IL. If I believe so strongly in a rookie who's in AAA, if I believe so strongly in a rehabbing injured guy that I'm going to spend a draft pick, especially still a premium draft pick. It's one thing if it's like my 29th pick, I'm going to draft a rookie, see if he makes the roster, like in the 5 days between when I draft and opening day. And it's easy to cut my 29th pick. But if I draft Bryce Harper, I know myself. there is no way I am cutting him until the word comes out that he's out all season. Now, that's not likely. We know he's likely to come back, but I agree with Jeff. I would take the under on him playing 10 games all season in the outfield. I don't believe they will play him in the outfield. He's too important a bat to him. He is their DH this year, I believe, at least until like August, September, maybe for the postseason, they start trying to ramp him up in the outfield. But why would you mess around with that? So I think he's going to be DH only for the rest of this season. I believe in injuries will find you. You don't need to find them. Mm-hmm. Now I'll make the counter argument. The counter argument is you can do the math. You get to use a player when Bryce Harper is not playing. And if you add in a replacement level outfielder or DH player and what Bryce Harper would give you, even only over three months, it's very easy to see where the strike point is. You can then try to figure out a formula for opportunity cost. And from just a math perspective, my guess is Bryce Harper at this draft point, I haven't done the math because I don't want him. It's probably a good pick. Like, I think math wise, if you take his projection plus a replacement player, you probably come out way ahead. And some people are good at playing like with six bench spots, are fine with playing with six bench spots. And if you're one of them, then go for it. In DCs, where I have like 27 bench spots, it's more interesting to me, right? It is easier to hide a guy in a DC. So it's like, maybe if I were doing a DC, I would approach it differently. But certainly for redrafts, I will have no part of Bryce Harper this year, which is a shame because I like Bryce Harper.
Yeah, I would agree. Definitely tough to manage that. I'm not good with that either, Rob, with cutting bait when a guy's injured and might be coming back. And it just brings a lot of stress to me. I'm wondering, Jeff, in the labor leagues, because he has the outfield sticker on him, do you know if they have different eligibility rules for labor versus the NFBC?
I think there's his 15. Did he play that many out there?
He might have been right on the cusp there.
Okay.
So that might have been, as you're talking, Jeff, I can look it up how many he actually got in.
It was kind of interesting in that one because I know I was listening to if you kind of ignore, go find the podcast with Jeff Erickson.
No, he only had 8 games in the outfield last year. So that's either a mistaken sticker or they have really weird.
They may not have a utility one. That might be another thing also. But it was interesting to listen to the guys talk about taking DeGrom in those type of leagues, like where you have the IL and it's a little bit easier to move him on and you're not going to have to take up a spot. I've got a couple of those leagues coming up with the industry type leagues, Tout Wars in my labor league, and they definitely have a little bit more value because you can just put them there. And when they come back, like Trevor Story, I was amazed he made it to like the last round. Like he should have been drafted way before then and someone just picked someone else up. But it's a different format, and you have to know your rules for them. Cause I think some of them that have like the 3 IL spots, I still think that's worth just taking a chance on some of those little more hurt guys. Cause you just have the flexibility with them.
I guess that's why I'm a little surprised that Harper went at 193 in the labor and DeGrom went at pick 60. You know, you figure with the IL, they would just get even like, you know, just be a little more aggressive if they could be guys that you could put on the IL. But that's pretty interesting. Yeah, I think he got him at round 4 after getting Strider. So it's a pretty interesting combination right there. But let's move on to Lars Nynutbar, one of the biggest draft season darlings. We have confirmation that he has shared his shirt off with Eno Saris as well. So he's got that going for him. But 14 homers, 4 stolen bases, and 347 plate appearances going roughly as outfielder 41 off the board. Jeff, what do you think about Lars Nynutbar?
I like him. It's one of these deals where it's like he's just this wide open sleeper. So it's not, I'm just kind of still surprised he's this low. I kind of wonder if people are maybe a little projection based and people aren't looking for the upside. But his hitting profile, when I looked at it, it was like literally almost identical to Harper's. Like they pull the ball the same amount. They both have the same hard hit rate. They both put the ball in the air almost exactly the same. Now, he Nubar does not make as much contact. It's still not a horrible strikeout rate, probably around, yeah, about 20%. As a whole, like I said, I like him. The one issue is the Cardinals outfield is it's just crowded right now, and they don't know where the playing time is going to end up. They got Jordan Walker. They got Tyler O'Neill. They got Dylan Carlson. They've got a couple good – Brendan Donovan can play out there. They've got a couple – another rookie, I'm losing his name, Burleson. Mm-hmm. Yeah, can also play. The one deal is Newbar isn't like guaranteed a job. Like if he struggles, I don't know if he's going to get demoted, but he could definitely cut into some of his playing time. I think that's the only issue with him right now. And maybe the Cardinals are just going to try to be nice and, you know, let him play 80% of the time, you know, 70%. And I just think like the plate appearance is the only issue you have. Otherwise, there's a huge upside. So I think if you give him 500 plate appearances, 525, that's even higher than a lot of the projections. And he is a value then. I think there's this huge upside that if he just takes off, you know, you're looking at 600, 650, 675 plate appearances, and you're getting a great steal. So just knowing... Yeah, I'm just like I said, the only thing I can just see is the playing time. It's kind of like where Jason Martinez with this team, he has the opportunity to kind of give the playing time to everybody, and they all might deserve it. We just don't know who that's going to be. But since he went to Driveline, he's got all these great, his little lollipop freaking looking thing at Savant is great. I think I'm really surprised he's not going 40 picks higher than this.
Yeah, Statcast. It's interesting to me if you compare the bat projection for him and the bat X projection for him. The difference, as I understand it, and Cardi can correct me if I'm wrong, is the bat X incorporates Statcast, whereas the bat is a more traditional, quote-unquote, pre-Statcast version of a projection system. The bat X model, so the one that has... You know, and Derek has tested everything, has full knowledge of his Statcast profile, gives him one extra home run, one extra RBI. So basically a solo home run difference. His batting average goes up from 234 to 241. So that's not nothing, but that's Statcast. And his WRC plus in terms of like his real life quality of player takes him from 108 WRC plus to 114. So I'm not saying Derek is all knowing. I'm not saying that incorporates his upside, but I think it's fascinating that all of the Statcast brilliance that he brings, and he really does when you see how hard he hits the ball, translates to almost no difference in terms of the projection. I agree, but I do, like all my Statcast jokes aside, I do agree with Jeff that there's a lot of upside. Part of what I think you're making a bet on with him is how much do the Cardinals like Tommy Edman, not in terms of Tommy Edman playing, but in terms of Tommy Edman leading off.
Yep.
Because I am way more interested in Nootbaar if I knew he was going to be the leadoff hitter than the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th hitter. The challenge I think is going to be is these things are not binary. Through a 6-month season, I think there will be times when he's leading off. There will be times that he's hitting 7th or 8th. There will be times that he is playing every single day. There will be times that he is playing annoyingly little. And I think at the end of the season, I agree with Jeff, where the projections are like 500-ish plate appearances is probably a pretty good projection. If he takes a massive step forward, even with all the mouths to feed, they won't be able to keep him out of the lineup. But I wouldn't pay for that, and I wouldn't assume it. So there is a lot of mouths to be fed there, and there's a giant range of outcomes with Lars Nootbaar. The one thing you cannot say if you draft him is free Lars Nootbaar. It's like you have to be eyes wide open that he could be sent down. I don't think that's likely. That he could be a part-time player, or that he could be a frustrating as hell player. So don't bitch and complain if you draft him and he ends up being exactly what you have to know he is as of today, which is, boy, he could be really frustrating. Like, you don't get to complain if you draft him and he just isn't playing every day because the Cardinals don't care about your fantasy team.
You don't have to say free Lars Newt Bar, but you can say Newt Newt if you want to Google Newt Newt. It's actually a song. It's a cartoon song with a penguin in it. It's pretty fucking crazy.
That's amazing.
It really is amazing.
Is he like a Viking? Like the what's the family origin of Lars Newt Bar? I know nothing about Lars Newt Bar.
I believe he's playing for Japan.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, this is a traditional Japanese name. For Newt Bar. Of course it is.
Yeah, I was caught a little surprised. I think he's on
one of his parents.
I think he's on that roster, if I'm not mistaken. But I would agree with the whole leading off batting sixth and crowded outfield thing as well. And I think what gets lost too in the Tommy Edman sucks, he shouldn't bat lead off, is that in the last 85 plate appearances versus righties while he led off, Newt Bar, while he did show like good plate discipline, he only had a 569 OPS in those last 85 plate appearances. So just be wary of that before. But I would agree, Jeff, I thought he would be a lot higher by now just from the, you know, those, the trendy drive line and awesome power metric that he's shown. But let's move on to Cody Bellinger, ADP 186, 19 homers, 14 steals, and a wonderful 210 average in 2022. He's 193 average in his last 900 plate appearances. Jeff, what are we thinking about Cody Bellinger in 2023?
Oh, God. He's finally at a price where I'm like optimistically interested. The shift, I don't know how much to buy, if the shift's going to help him or not, or it being gone. He was definitely was full shift. He had a full shift on him 91% of the time. That's probably like every time that the bases, you know, weren't loaded against him. He has had some issues against lefties. So I don't think that that's going to go away. But also, if you have some batting average, 20 home runs with like 15 steals is pretty damn nice at this point. Like I said, a lot of the other guys, you know, like, oh, we're not getting any stolen bases, but maybe if you have the batting average early with from some players early, and you, like I said, you need power and speed, you're still getting both of those at this point. So I could see a lot of builds where it gets to this point and I just pull the trigger and just know that, yeah, that batting average could just be an issue, but also knowing that it could possibly move up and maybe the change of scenery, something. I have no idea on any of that, that I'm sure if he does start hitting better, that'll be the number one cause of it. You know, he had to get out of that horrible Dodgers place, which they know nothing about players and, you know, just drag everyone down. But as much crap as he probably gets, I could see a lot of builds just where he kind of fixes some problems as they get to this point in the draft.
He's another guy to me, like Cody Bellinger is a very easy guy to make fun of. Let's put that aside. I am relieved as a Blue Jays fan that they did not end up signing Cody Bellinger. Let's put that aside. Take his career and cross off 2019. Just pretend the MVP season never happened. And except, as a matter of fact, there is no chance he's going to get back to the 2019 47 home run levels again. Look at his 2018, though, the year before his giant season, where he hit 25 home runs, stole 14 bases, 84 runs, 76 RBIs, 260. Use that as your ceiling, like as your goal, because that's awesome, right? Like at this point of the draft, if you could get his 2018 season, you do that in a second. Just for context, that worked out to that he was the 61st player on the player rater in 2018. That would be awesome if you could get that Cody Bellinger right now. Well, let me tell you something. If you take his 2021 season, as horrendous as it was, and give him the same number of plate appearances that he had in 2018. So 2018, he hit 25 home runs. Last year, prorated over the plate appearances he had in 2018, he had 22 home runs. 2018, he had 160 runs plus RBIs. Last year, prorated, he had 159 runs plus RBIs. 2018, he had 14 stolen bases. Last year, Cody Bellinger, if you prorate it, would have had 16 stolen bases. So basically, you would have traded off two home runs for two stolen bases. Let's just pretend batting average is into category, so you don't care about batting average at all. My point in that is part the joke, for all the talk of his swing change and like noise. He's not that far away as of today from becoming that guy again. He needs a bit more Babbitt luck, and he does need to improve a little bit. But my point just is, if that's where you're setting your eyes, he may not get back to 260, but if he could put up the home runs, the stolen bases, and the counting stats and get up to 230, 240, then that's awesome at this price. And it doesn't require massive changes. But let's not be stupid here. He's also 2 months of like continuing what he's done the last two seasons from the Cubs saying, we can't possibly play this guy anymore. We're DFAing him. It was like a one-year contract. We're sucking this up. And that is not crazy either, that they just say, we cannot keep putting a guy out there who is hitting under 200. It's not just, this is not just Joey Gallo bad. Like, he's a legitimately bad hitter. His defense helps him a little bit on that front, but they owe him nothing. If he is embarrassing himself, like if it is just rough, at a certain point, they may cut their losses. And I think that is in the real realm of possibilities, but it does not take a lot for Cody Bellinger to be a top 60, top 70 player again, at all. And at this price, again, it's a pretty smart risk reward balance to my mind.
Right. Absolutely. It's pretty enticing at this spot for sure for that power speed combo. And he's still pulling a ball at the same amount. It's just with a lot less authority. So between the leg injury and the shoulder injury, who knows how much that's taken from him. But hey, we can see a scenario too. If that happens, Rob, and the Cubs cut bait and Kiermaier's hurt at that point of the season too, and the Blue Jays are going to scoop him right up.
That's dark.
Okay, next player on the list is Keibert Ruiz, catcher on the Washington Nationals, going on average 189, as low as 164. Pretty good K to walk. Just lost a lot of power from his AAA and major league numbers in 2021 to last season. Jeff, what's your thoughts on Keibert Ruiz?
First of all, I'd like to say from the draft, it's like everyone just must hate pitching during this era, because it's like just a ton of hitters in a row. Like, we even have more coming after this.
Yep.
It was just like, screw it, dude. I've got my pitching. I'm going with hitters here for a while. But with Ruiz, I think he's like fine and doesn't hurt your team. His batting average is like okay. He may not have the greatest power. The one thing is he can't hit lefties at all. It's just let me see. I've got the numbers here. He's got a 623 OPS in the majors, and it was like under 700 in the minors. Like, he struggled even then. So the deal is like in the depth charts, they got Riley Adams, which is he's like worse against lefties. So there's no like platoon. Like, Ruiz is just going to have to go out there and suck up those at bats. Like, I think it would be better if on his off days, they could find someone to come in and help him there. But he's got a batting average that doesn't hurt you. He's going to provide some power. And at the catcher position, sometimes that's all you want. Like I said, I don't think he's going to have the upside of Jansen. I do think getting close, I haven't gone through it yet, where I kind of like, oh, this is like the line I draw, and there's some other ones. But there's definitely some guys later I kind of like too. So he's not there yet where it's like the drop-off really happens. But it's getting really close where it might be like, okay, I have to take him, or, you know, I'm kind of going to be sucking up the 210 batting average for my catchers from then on. So I can see why he's going here, and I think it's fine. I really don't know if there's much upside with the power. Just hasn't really shown it either way. Like the hard hurt rate of 30% is just 32% just really isn't cutting it. He is trying to pull the ball. He's trying to put it in the air, but he just doesn't seem to have the power right now.
Yeah. Of players last year who had 400 or more plate appearances, he had the third fewest runs plus RBIs. The bottom two were Spencer Torkelson and Miguel Cabrera. And then Ruiz. And I'm not sure it gets any better for him in his context. So I agree with Jeff. Like, he's a safe guy. He's not going to kill you. But sneaky wise, if you draft him here with not very much power, not many runs, not many RBIs, but a okay batting average, he sort of is killing you here. He's just not killing you in batting average. He's killing you everywhere else. He stole six bases, which is nice from your catcher spot this late. So he's fine. He's young enough with enough of a profile. Maybe he takes a step forward on the power side, but I don't think you count on it. So I get why somebody's taking him here, but there's way more interesting hitters in this kind of hitter run to me than Ruiz is.
Yep. I think, like you guys said, he's not gonna kill you, but he doesn't stand out specifically in any one area. But again, Jeff, I'll add to your split difference too. He's a guy who doesn't hit the ball even as hard as a right-handed batter, 106 max EV compared to the 109.4 as a lefty. So, but like you said, Riley Adams is definitely not one that really should take some time away from him. The next guy on the board, outfielder Oscar Gonzalez on the Cleveland Guardians, going to pick 189. He's a pretty polarizing player for me. I hit the ball really hard, but on the ground a lot. He did really well last year in 382 plate appearances, 11 homers, 296 average. Jeff, what do you think about Oscar the Grouch Gonzalez?
Yeah. Got some Javier Baez in him. So just kind of put that there where he may not have the athleticism, but he's kind of got like the power, speed, no plate discipline approach. I was trying to see how he did it, and I dug in, and he actually makes really good contact, even though he's out of the zone. And he almost hits everything high, and it's for a single. And I think everyone then started pitching him low and away. And if you look at like a heat map of his power, it's all like low and away. It's just this big red blob if you take it on Fangraphs where like his ISO is there. So he kind of covers the plate really well. That they don't – either you kind of get singled to death, or even though he may chase a little bit outside, that's where like his power is. So I kind of wonder if teams like, oh, we're just going to, you know, early on he had that high batting average, but not a lot of power. And then they kind of went low to get the strikeouts and so forth. So he's interesting. I can see why people don't like him. The strikeout rate, his plate discipline are just like the walks. Like he's swinging at everything and he doesn't have like the Kwan contact numbers. But it seems to work for him. He's spreading the ball all over. And at this point, he's just kind of an averagely nice kind of guy where he's contributing across the board. The one thing, I just have this in my notes. I must have been looking at like lost home runs. I know he had lost, according to like the Savant page, that he had was one of the highest lost home runs. Like he should have had more home runs last year, considering where he hit the ball in the various parks and so forth, even like within his home park. So that might be one thing. You might be able to get a few more home runs out of him. But I kind of like him, but I can understand why people don't like the profile. But we don't care about walks in most of the fantasy baseball leagues. But if there is some with walks, I could definitely see where he moves down.
He has a higher ground ball rate than Miles Straw does. That's not great for Miles Straw or Oscar Gonzalez. I loved Oscar Gonzalez last year as a free agent, and I quite enjoyed Oscar Gonzalez. My gut is this ends very badly if you draft Oscar Gonzalez this year. and this is a gut call more than a projection call. The projections like him, like as a player, and think that he's quite good. But my gut is for a guy who a year ago at this time, Cleveland had just exposed to the Rule 5 draft and was an absolute afterthought them, as good as he was last year for them. I think that they have a lot of talent in that system right now. Like, he can be replaced very quickly. All my jujubes are this, like a year from now, we are talking about like Oscar Gonzalez playing somewhere else. So I'd love to be wrong, because I really do like him as a player, but I don't think this ends well for him at all.
Yeah, he's got that interesting 14% swinging strike rate to 19% K rate. Usually that K rate would be a lot higher with that high swinging strike rate. And I was messing around a little bit on the new pitcher list, rolling graphs, and he had some interesting, they call it the decision values or swing aggression. And he just seems like he's a lot more aggressive than the major league average. Not only in normal counts, but three ball count. Maybe he's got kind of like a good eye, and then he's getting to that three ball count and just wants to put the ball in play and be a little aggressive. But yeah, I agree with you, Rob. He helped me a lot last year in Fab. He was a guy like I was definitely hanging on to, even when he got his injury. You know, I think that was another, you know, like you were talking about, you don't know when to hold on to a guy. He was a polarizing player because the outfield and the power right was so weak last year, especially on my team. And when he got hurt, I was kind of like, oh, should we hold on to him and drop him? You know, Phil probably dropped him, but I helped. No doubt.
Phil dropped him a week before he got hurt. He didn't want to have to even make a decision before he got hurt. He the week before he dropped him.
You know it. All right, let's move on to Jeff McNeil, New York Mets, second base and outfield eligible, going off the board at ADP 191. 326 average last year, lifetime 307. Jeff, what do you say about Jeff McNeil?
Oh, Jeff McNeil, he's a player I don't want in my starting lineup, but I want on my bench. Like, he's good enough to like plug in for the second base and the outfield to kind of cover if someone's hurt. He can help me with my batting average. He's probably not going to steal a base that week, but he's not going to kill me. He's going to be playing every day. But it's just like no power, no speed. And I guess if I need batting average later in the season, I just plug him in for someone else that has it. But I don't know if I really want to be drafting my bench bat here. So I went to look, like, he's got the same ADP in the online championship. So people still must kind of like it, but my values just don't have him nearly this high. And just kind of a one-dimensional player that hopefully I'm not looking for. But I know a lot of people that kind of ignore batting average and try to deal with it later. And maybe he's one of the guys that people are adding to try to kind of solve that problem.
Yeah, the idea of Jeff McNeil is better than the reality of Jeff McNeil. I think that's what Jeff is sort of saying by, I'd rather have him on my bench because then his stats don't actually count for me, but he's around. It's not awesome when you're a player with no power, no speed. Your carry tool from a fantasy perspective is batting average, but you don't play enough ever for your batting average to truly make a full contribution to the team. So, like, look, I'll say the Brandon Nimmo thing with him, which is Jeff McNeil is one season away for everybody forgetting that he has never had 600 plate appearances, because Jeff McNeil could get 650 plate appearances this year. But the problem is, when you have his power speed combo, give him 650 plate appearances and it gets better, but it doesn't get great. He's a much more valuable player for the Mets than he is for your fantasy team. Like, he's a really good actual baseball player. He's a really valuable baseball player for the Mets, but he's had one top 100 season ever. Like, he's only finished as a top 100 player one time. So that's what I mean by the idea of Jeff McNeil, which is, oh, he's awesome. Like, I want me some Jeff McNeil as a complimentary piece. And the reality of Jeff McNeil aren't quite the same thing. So, you know, I'd love to see what a full season of Jeff McNeil is. I just don't think, like, last year he played 148 games and got 589 plate appearances. I just don't think the Mets want him to play any more than that. So, like, I really do think from a playing time, that's probably his ceiling. And he had 9 home runs and 4 stolen bases. Like, what the what are you doing with that? You can't play that. Like, it does. He could be hit. He hit 326. That's really, really good. But, like, what are you doing? What's the team that has enough power and enough speed that you can eat 9 and 4? Like, I don't draft teams that good. If you have a team that's that good, then draft Jeff McNeil. My teams just aren't good enough to have Jeff McNeil giving me no power, no stolen bases, and not playing every day.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's fair enough. He definitely is a really good real life player for sure.
He's awesome. He's awesome.
He's really awesome.
He had a 6-win season last year. Phenomenal. Like, I say it like poo poo. That's terrible. In real baseball, that's a 6-win player, like 6 Fangraph win player. Like, that's awesome. But the Mets don't care about like that's what he is. He was not a top 100 player last year.
Right. And I think this is, I'm surprised that his OC ADP is the same, because I think in draft champion, 2 position, just being a guy that's on the field a lot, that's a good option to have on your team. You could fit him in. But on the online championships, I had him last year and I dropped him because it was just better. You know, in a 12 team league, you need to catch up in the home runs and stolen bases. And he just wasn't cutting it for me. So became a streaming spot for me. Let's go on to John Gray, pitcher, Texas Rangers, going on ADP 193. First year out of Colorado, 127 innings, 134 Ks. Jeff, what do you think about John Gray?
He's fine. I think this is perfectly fine for him. I don't think he's a guy you're going to start every week. He's probably like an 80% starter. The strikeouts were good. Like, when he was healthy last year, he was fine. Like, he kind of, his velo dropped a little bit when he had that oblique strain. He was better once he got healthy, but I think that's who you would kind of expect to get here. Kind of looking at his innings pitched to 174, that's what I have him for. I might have to bring that down a little bit. Actually, I'm probably going to, but nope. Keeps his velocity good through the thing, through each thing. There's no kind of big thing out of place. So I think you're kind of getting maybe just a little bit of a sub-4 ERA pitcher with a ton of strikeouts. Doesn't really a horrible on your whip. It's not great. He's not going to help you, but I think he's fine. I'd just say he's just kind of fine right here.
I think he's a little bit better than fine. I think I like John Gray going into last season a lot. I wish he'd had a full season. I think there's a bit more strikeout upside there. Like, I was looking at his new PLA numbers from last year. They have his slider, which he throws 36% of the time, as a really good pitch for him, like a 2.45 PLA off of the pitch. So I think that he is – assuming health, which is a big assumption with Gray coming off of last year, I think he is both a nice floor with a ceiling that's higher than some of the other guys. Again, we haven't talked, we probably won't talk about any other pitchers today, but I like John Gray. If you need another starting pitcher, I think he is much better than some of the other starting pitchers we've already talked about the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I think the upside for him having a little bit more of a ceiling is that stretch he had right before he got hurt in 70 innings. He had a 28% strikeout rate and a 2.56 ERA. He was just really – I think he found this groove. He also found, I think, a right pitch mix that was working for him. And, you know, I think there's some room for him to really blossom this season. Let's hit Whit Merrifield, him of the Toronto Blue Jays, another second base / outfield eligible player going off the board at ADP 193. Dropped from 40 stolen bases in 2021 to 16 last year. Jeff, what are your thoughts on Whit Merrifield?
It's like Jeff McNeil, but with like another decent trait. He can actually like steal a base. The problem with Merrifield is, I don't know if it is, Rob, What is going on with the playing time? Let's start with that. You can discuss the Blue Jays playing time, but I think that that's the biggest issue with him is how many at bats he's going to steal or how many bats he's going to have throughout the whole season. I just don't know how it's going to play out.
So if we assume that the Toronto Blue Jays do not bring in another outfielder, so they were in on Robbie Grossman, like there are lots of people who think they need to get a true fourth outfielder, a right-handed hitting fourth outfielder. I will assume they bring in no other, that the roster is the roster going into opening day as it is right now. Then from just a playing time, then I'll send it back to Jeff to talk about Witt, and then I'll come back. Is I think that as of today, I would set the over-under on games played for Witt at 150. I think he is the most day second baseman, and he is the fourth outfielder. So if Kevin Kiermaier gets injured, I know that would never happen, but in a hypothetical world where Kevin Kiermaier gets hurt, I think Witt slides and becomes an everyday outfielder. In a world where George Springer gets injured, he becomes an everyday outfielder. But I think he will play second base as long as the four outfielders are healthy, and then he will give everybody a day off in the outfield and to get Espinal into the lineup as well, maybe Biggio occasionally. The flip side is, what's the biggest difference between the Kansas City days and now is, short of some bizarre things happening to the Jays, he will hit 7th, 8th, 9th every single day. He is not going to be hitting at the top of the lineup. So that does cap his plate appearances, which is why I started with games played. But I do think he will play almost every day, at least 6 times a week kind of thing.
Yeah, I guess my biggest – so if he's playing that much, he still has his speed. That's still in his repertoire. He's still – the one deal is he's just not much – he doesn't have the on-base skills. Like his OPS, all of the projections are sub 700 with the bat X even being the worst. So it's kind of taken some of his Statcast stuff into account there. That's kind of, I guess where my problem is like, I think there's a scenario where he's just so bad that they have to just bench him. Like he's going to be 33 years old, 34, 33. Next year. So he just may be on a downward trend and just can't be played. So it's kind of tough to take him at this point, knowing that I think for me that that's a possibility. But I've also liked the possibility that I can get some speed here in two different positions and not be a complete zero in power, possibly help my batting average. So I can see the upside on him. I just can't. I also see the downside of kind of what happened last year in the middle of the season where he's just unstartable.
Yeah, I mean, just an observation. Whit Merrifield is one of the most underrated fantasy players. Forget real baseball, fantasy players of the last decade. Like, let me read off his finishes from 2018 to 2021 on the Player Rater. 2018, 19th overall. This isn't hitters, overall. 2019, 33rd. 2020, 19th. 2021, 21st.
What was other it last than, year?
Sorry, I said from 2018 to 2021. I did a study. It's my study, and it was a 4-year study that ended at the end of 2021. Other than like Trey Turner and Bryce Harper, that's incredible. Like just as a run, like 4 straight top 35, 3 of the 4 top 25 seasons, and I don't think most like serious fantasy baseball players would think of him as a guy who had that kind of a run, because they would say, well, he really, like, he was an accumulator. It was based on like getting 700 plate appearances every year. True. And he wasn't that good a real baseball player. True. And I could give a shit. Like, it happened. I'm not predicting he is going back to that. First off, there's no chance he can get the volume on the Jays to do anything like that. I think he could be pretty good. I don't know how much he's going to be able to run on the Jays at the bottom of the lineup. Like if you have George Springer and then like Vlad and Bo Bichette and Dalton Varsho coming up, the opportunities that you'd necessarily give a Whit Merrifield to run are a lot different than on those Kansas City teams. So I think I like him in DCs a lot more than I do in redraft because of the position eligibility, and like I hopefully have some more options to bring him in and out of my lineup. Like, is there a scenario that he's like that he is good and is a really good pick here? There is. There's just so many ways that it doesn't. I agree with Jeff. Like, I'm not sure that he is a better real life second baseman than three other players that the Blue Jays have on their team. And the fact that his name is Whit Merrifield and he's a veteran and so on will buy him some rope, but only so much. So we'll see. I'm conflicted on this pick.
Yeah. I would agree with all you guys said. It's very conflicting and on multiple levels. We don't know if the speed will keep up. Obviously, it might be easier to steal a base this year, but I do think the playing time will be there, though. I agree with you on that, Rob. I think he's going to be in there more often than not because of the injuries to the team and just his versatility. But we'll wrap it up on Whit Merrifield, and I have a feeling that the next two guys on our list, if we see some spring training pitches from Kodai Senga and Grayson Rodriguez, we might be talking about how the ADP rose from this week to next week. But another fantastic episode. Guys, any parting words before we leave?
No, it just, I love this part of the season when stuff's actually changing, getting some information, getting something new. Like, this is the best.
Yep. Even though there are so many things for you to review for Mining the News, like it must be just a fire hose right now, but in a good way. Like, there's actual stuff now as opposed to just like the bullshit of early February or November.
Yeah, and it actually kind of dies once games start because most of that stuff's useless because, I mean, the reporters have to write X number of words and most of them are about the game, which nothing, you know, really matters for us fantasy-wise. So that's actually, it'll die down a little bit. But right now, it's just see what you can find. I don't know. I've got a few hundred to dig through today. See what I can. I just go as far as I can and send Paul the article later. That's all I can do.
It's crazy also that 4 weeks from right now, we'll be in Vegas. Like, it's really soon.
Yep. Very soon, for sure. Yep. But all right, fellas, thank you so much. And thanks, Andrew. And we'll catch you next week. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to another Launch Angle podcast. Appreciate all the follows, the subscribes, the ratings and the reviews. Helped goes a long way for me, Jeff, and Rob. So I hope everyone enjoyed this podcast and we brought you some great actionable advice. And we'll see you next week on the Launch Angle podcast. Thank you, folks.